And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to a, can we call this what, 2021-22 season edition of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. We're limping into the new season. Ethan Strauss has moved on to bigger and better things, Substack, as you've probably seen. Marcus Thompson on vacation. We should probably have him back next week as we rev it up and start to have at least a weekly one before the season. Tim Kawakami is here, though. I pulled him off the Niners for a brief.
Literally, I am in the middle of a 49ers column. So if I start spouting off about Trey Lance or Trent Sherfield, I'm in the wrong podcast. I'll get my mind back on Warriors. Well, I am literally in the middle of a 49ers column, but that's okay.
Let me keep you on the Niners because I'm very from afar on this, but I don't know. You tell me how much parallels you see from the Wiseman situation and the Trey Lance situation, but top pick, hyped preseason. Obviously Trey Lance didn't start in game one, but he still got some time. But I think it's interesting that just the hype around it, and particularly when I was seeing all the preseason Trey Lance hype, I was like, I can kind of remember this on Wiseman. I was definitely part of it, We were in a Zoom world. Remember when they were sending like little video clips where you're like, oh, there is a 7-foot center in the gym, like running the break, but we weren't seeing everything. I don't know. Do you see those parallels?
I hadn't before you brought that up. Lance is, they traded 3 number one picks to move up for Lance. It was really different. The team that really values its number one picks that has Jimmy Garoppolo. They're only one person can play quarterback at a time.
Yeah, quarterback is a big deal.
It was a lot bigger deal, but I understand it. I mean, it's a ultra talented player who's very young. And hey, by the way, what did Wiseman play? 4 college games before he was drafted, and Trey Lance played 1 for very different reasons. Lance was because it was the pandemic, and Wiseman was because of the eligibility questions. But yeah, that part actually is very, very similar. Both very young players. Lance just turned 21, which is he's the youngest quarterback in the NFL this season. It's just different because quarterback is like point guard plus center. Right? It's so much weightier a position, especially quarterback at the 49ers, because I do believe they've had some pretty good quarterbacks in the past. So it's different. I really hadn't thought of that, there's one parallel, and it's the coach trying to figure out the spot where to put him.
That is what has made it increasingly more interesting to me, because it's like usually you'd say, look, like yes, James Wiseman started, but it's a basketball game. You can kind of pepper in 18 minutes, as they'll probably try to do in season 2 with him. Well, you can't really do that with the quarterback. You're starting him or you're not starting him, right? But I mean,
they're trying to go in between. Yeah, they are getting him in there. We'll see how this plays out. I'd say the other difference, just in terms of the way we approached it, is that Steve Kerr did not pick James Wiseman. I'm sure he signed off on it. It was, he's all with it. He went to all the workouts. But, that's picked by Bob Myers and Joe Lacob and everyone else and Steve Kerr. Trey Lance was Kyle Shanahan's pick, right? That's his pick. So that, the way he moves him around is not involved with any other.
Well, that's his position.
He's the leader. He's the number one guy in the organization. It's done. I mean, he makes every important decision is Kyle Shanahan. It's in his contract. It's the way it was set up. So it's different that way. NFL is just different than the NBA that way. And especially quarterback, obviously, with an offensive-minded head coach. It's a bigger deal. I see what you're saying. I mean, I might go like Wiseman plus Kuminga plus Moody. Would be the
Moody. Moody getting thrown in. Here we go.
I mean, it's way bigger than that. It's just it is the entire future of the franchise is Trey Lance. Maybe not this year, but possibly this year. Probably by the end of this year. James Wiseman is a big part of the Warriors franchise, but he's not the future of the franchise. And Trey Lance is the future. Trading three number one picks for to move up for a 21-year-old quarterback is just in a whole other context. And as you probably saw by the reaction, I mean, it fired up 49er fan base more than anything I've ever been around. You know, comparable to the Joe Montana, Steve Young thing from years and years ago. And of course, the funny thing is that we won't talk 49ers for a long time, but it is a little like NBA. Now they're like, oh, Mac Jones looked good. Why didn't they take Mac Jones? When the whole thing was, how dare they even consider taking Mac Jones? It is the NFL thing goes teeter-totter way more than any other sports. The NBA fandom is, we know it's crazy. We can talk about it a little bit, you know, how furious they are about, you know, not getting enough veteran players for Curry. It's all, you know, Steve Kerr's fault, Joe Jacobs' fault, whatever. But the NFL thing goes back and forth. It's just this teeter-totter of, you know, it's never like, ah, we'll see. It's never that. It's they screwed it up or it's the best pick ever. You can't go in between with the NFL, which is a little irrational or maybe a lot irrational.
Well, there's a lot of overlap, too. I mean, we're talking about sports fans, right?
Games. Yeah, you see 17 games. So, you know, it builds to that. At least in the NBA, you kind of see it all. It's all out there. And then you kind of weigh it on that. You don't weigh it on expectation, anticipation, and then one game a week. And maybe, you know, Trey Lance plays four plays in that one game. You know, it is a very, very tilted towards, you know, wild swings of emotion. And that's the NFL. That's why people love it so much, I guess. That's why they pay so much money to see these games. NBA goes its own weird way, but it's not that. And maybe there's even more rationality because you do see so much. That's one thing. Like the NBA, like you see these players, and so everybody has this definitive opinion on every single player. I get a little, you know, that seems irrational to me too, but we don't have to talk all about this, but there is a difference.
Yeah, it is a quiet time around the Warriors, but we both know it will be ramping up soon.
I'm hearing about those players working out. I mean, you named a bunch of them. Well, I'm hearing from a couple people that they're getting a good turnout, and they're it's from people on the team, but they say it's very positive in there, and you know, these guys are looking good, they're working hard, and there's a good vibe. Are you hearing the same thing?
Yeah, this is, you know, early to mid-September is really the time of year where you start to see more guys flood in. That Warriors, I would say more than in past years, and I think a lot of that's because it's a longer off season than that in past years. You know, you win the title. Vets aren't rushing back September 1st. Hey, let's get some, you know, scrimmages in. They're like trying to squeeze out every last moment of a shortened off season. Warriors don't have that. I mean, you know, when was their last game? When was that playing game against the Grizzlies? Like May?
I don't remember. Yeah, I know it was it June? I think it was. Yeah, it was June. No, it was May. I'm sorry, it was May.
So my mind is scrambled. Yeah. But still, I mean, it's an extended off season than what they've had, and you know, hunger, like they really want to get back to season. So yeah, Steph Curry's been in there a bunch scrimmaging. He was in there at least one of the days that Darren Collison came in for his whatever you want to call it workout tryout, essentially. Jordan Poole has been in a bunch. Some of the JTA's always in there. Damian Lee, you know, guys are around, and it's
Clay Thompson.
Clay Thompson has been in. He's driving his boat back and forth. He even was driving it to the Giants game. But, you know, his workout, he's not scrimmaging with everyone else. He's doing his more, like, private individual workout as he's trying to get his body back to game shape, essentially. And he's doing more, but again, you know, that you sense a patient approach from them. You do hear December, January-ish. They're not putting a firm date of, like, it's got to be here. They hope it's here. It's more just, like, they'll see the progression, but there maintains no belief that you're going to suddenly see Klay Thompson opening night or anything like that. You know, the roster's full to 14, and then the only, I guess, you know, you could call it drama left is this 15th open roster spot, which right now Gary Payton the second and Michael Mulder, I would say, somewhat have like an inside track for it. And then they are planning to bring in other guys. You know, like I said, they've tried out some veterans. Darren Collison, Ryan Archidiakono's coming in this week. I've heard a couple other possible names. Not that they've committed a camp invite to, but that they might. And then there might be some type of tryout for the 15th spot. And I guess that's really the only roster drama
going on right now. They also have an open two-way spot that I expect to be a camp competition. Those will be probably more on the younger side of players because you can't have more than 3 years in the league. Gary Payton, not eligible for a two-way. Michael Mulder actually is eligible for a two-way if he was to be released and cleared waiver. So that's where it's at.
Yeah, I think we can see a theme of what they're looking for that 15th spot. Playmaker on offense, we've all talked about.
Guard. Yep.
Yeah, guard who can initiate the offense when Steph is out in a way that maybe Brad Wanamaker did not do last season, but it would be in that role. I don't know that, you know, they're thinking it's got to be 12, 14 minutes, but it's somebody who can do that job. Jordan Poole can do that job too, you know, but they saw it, but they might be moving Jordan Poole into, you know, even more of a role with the main guys. So you can definitely see Collison would be that exactly. Arch Diacono, I don't know if he's quite that playmaker, but yeah, he's on the offensive side.
Good assist to turnover guy, can hit an open three, can defend okay. You know, he it would not be a glamorous you know, pick. To me, Gary Payton the second does more at that 15 spot. To me, he should be the favorite for that spot.
I've gone back and not even gone back and forth. I was not a Gary Payton the second guy, and then I thought, okay, you know what? I kind of like the way they adjusted in the summer league, and you basically play him like a power forward on offense. Because he's not a shooter, he's not, you know, he's not a dribbler, but he can finish. That guy can finish, but he can't. He's not an initiator, and he can get after you on defense. And those are some things they could use, you know, for 3 minutes at a time. Kerr's already used him for 3 minutes at a time last season. Just go get a guy. Go Damian Lillard. You know, we can kind of cool him down for two possessions. Go get him, GP2.
Well, and you know, you lost Oubre and you lost Bazemore, and that was your ball pressure guys.
Yep.
So that's I do think that's kind of a weakness. And you know, that's given up the idea of getting more of like a playmaking initiator that can maybe spread the floor. I mean, Darren Collison is an interesting name. The last time we saw him in the NBA, he was like a really solid like seventh man, and you're not going to find that out there elsewhere. But the idea, I mean, Darren Collison, I think it's now like near 34, 35, hasn't played an NBA game since 2019. So you're talking about nearly 3 years out of the league at this point.
And, you know, and anytime it's like that, it's an injury. You know, you don't know when. And
yeah,
if he's in good shape and looking good, whatever.
I heard he looked solid when he came in. He came in for 2 days, did some scrimmaging, and you know, I think it was mostly positive reviews. I've heard they'd be interested in him at a non-guaranteed invite. But you know, we're talking about a veteran who's deciding does he even want to come out of retirement, and I would assume he's sitting there wanting like some type of guarantee.
Yep.
And, you know, the Warriors are not ready to guarantee that 15th spot to anybody. And I've also, you know, Darren Collison, I believe is LA-based and I know has, like, trained some in the Lakers facility. And I think he has eyes on maybe one of the open Laker roster spots. So that is certainly an unsettled situation. But, again, you know, we're talking about the end of the roster. One other thing I will say about that 15th spot, you know, talking to different cap guys. I even had a conversation with John Hollinger about it. Are we sure the Warriors are going to use it? Because we've seen the way they have cost cut on the margins lately to just, you know, save big chunks of tax where they believe they can. Going back to when they ducked the tax by getting Jacob Evans and Omari Spellman out. And remember last year, late in the season, when they could they didn't have Gary Payton for 3 weeks because they're like every, you know, basically just saving tax money every day. By having 13 men on the roster, you can go into a season with four, you know, with an open 15th spot. That's allowed. It would save them every day a chunk of tax money. And I'm just curious if, you know, they go through camp, if they just don't love the options, or if it's just, you know, a mandate from ownership, hey, just save some tax money on the end of the roster. They will not say that now. They're messaging out that they have a camp competition because there's no way you can lure a Darren Collison or a Diacono or even, you know, Gary Payton to stick around if they don't think you're going to use the 15th spot. But I do think that's something to watch in the preseason, the idea of maybe leaving it open.
Yeah, and remember they had the 13-man roster last season, basically, right? Because they had Clay and Smiley-Geach, who did not count as actual players. So possible. I'm betting they will have a 15th at some point. I've been saying this forever. They clearly are going another way. What if a center gets hurt? Which Wiseman got hurt like three times last season. Looney, we know, is an injury risk. If you think you're going to be playing him 25 minutes a game, you know, who knows? What if one of those guys go down? I mean, they've been in games when both have gone down, right? I mean, clearly, what are you going to do? I mean, that I don't quite get out of all this, but it's their team. They're going to do what they do. Obviously, looking at Draymond to play a lot of five, probably, but then do you really want to do that? And what if Draymond gets hurt? I just don't, just given their history, it's mostly Kerr's history. He doesn't want to be thin there. You know, they've gone with six centers at a time just to make sure they got somebody and play five of them, you know, one at a 5 minutes at a time. And they do not have that. I thought Marquise Chris would have been an automatic. Maybe he didn't want to be their third center. I don't know. But those that position runs short sometimes. You really start going through centers fast. And again, what's Wiseman's most games played in a row? Probably like 22. You know, this is a possible. If they're going to be a good team, and you know, you could say last season they didn't need everything filled because they, no matter what, they weren't going to be a championship team. If this team thinks that when Clay is back 100%, that they got a shot to knock some people off in the playoffs, do you want to get to April and you're jockeying for the three seed, and all of a sudden Wiseman and Looney aren't playing, and your backup center is JTA? You know, your third center is Kuminga? I mean, I don't know. That part I don't quite get. But so, that's clearly the way they're going to do it.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point because, you know, with this 15th spot, they've talked about what they want the most. And, I mean, not only has Bob Meyer said publicly it's playmaking guard, but clearly, you know, talk about the guys that they have competing for it, Mulder, Payton, maybe they bring in some of these veterans. They're all guards. They're not even thinking about a center. Marquise Chris is now in Portland on a non-guaranteed invite up there. So I can definitely see the argument, especially in a West that has some really good big centers. Like, you're going to, on a pretty regular basis, going to need big bodies. I can see the argument of, hey, shouldn't that last roster spot just go to a big? But at the same time, if you, you know, they played their best last season. Some of their best ball was just small ball. And I do think just the way they played down the stretch with, or not even down the stretch. Remember middle of the season when Looney and Wiseman were out, they went to Dallas. They had that Texas road trip where it was two in Dallas, two in San Antonio. And going in, it was like, they're really going to go no centers on this trip. And then they go in and it's like, oh, this is like, they're playing really good basketball. And like, yes, JTA is the backup center. They won a game against Utah where JTA was just like, you know, holding Gobert off the glass. And they lost the rebounding margin, but they won the game because they just played a style that kind of unlocked. Remember Steph in small ball last year is part of the reason why he won the scoring title. Was how little they played centers at times. So I just think, you know, when you stratify the roster, I look at, it's basically like four spots. You look at the guards, it's Curry, Poole, Clay, Moody. Then you go more traditional wings: Wiggins, Kuminga, Otto Porter, Iguodala, Damian Lee. And then you have this non-wing, non-center spot that's Draymond, JTA. So we're talking four, I guess, but really small ball five at times too. And then Wiseman, Looney, Bielitsa, who we forget about, stretch five. So that's essentially five guys who I could see playing minutes at center this year. Draymond will get his small ball center minutes. JTA probably will. Wiseman obviously is going to get some center minutes. Looney, probably the starter opening night. And then when Bielitsa is on the floor, Bielitsa is like basically a stretch five. I mean, it's very rare he's going to be next to a center, so he's essentially kind of playing center. They do have a weakness in, particularly if Wiseman doesn't take a step of like handling big body guys, they are relying more than they probably should on Kevon Looney's body holding up. But I also kind of understand the idea of like guard is more of a need than center, because I think their idea is worst comes to worst, Draymond, JTA, small ball, just go after it that way. And then if it's like, hey, what if Draymond's hurt? It's like, well, you're screwed anyways if he's hurt.
Yeah, I get all that, but I just think if you could just say Wiseman's going to be healthy for 65 games, absolutely. And there's your, you know, you need to get 20 minutes out of a big center. You got it. That's your guy. I do not think you can say that. I don't think there's any way you can. You don't even know for sure if he's going to be healthy for training camp. So that's the question I would, in a team that you know, has expectations, and a team that really thinks that it can make some noise. I just don't know if you want to be that. And you know, a team that used to have David West, JaVale McGee, you know, Zaza Pachulia, all the bum, 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 Damian Jones. I mean, it just, they had too many of them, but that was pretty good for them too.
You know, the name that just pop free that would fit, I think, really well. And obviously they wanted in the past, Marcus Gasol. Just got free from the Warriors, from the Lakers, my bad. And, you know, is going to at least remain in Spain right now. He, you know, there's no, there's been no reporting that he's expecting to be out of the NBA for good, like it's any type of retirement ceremony. It could be something like an Andrew Bogut. Remember, Andrew Bogut was over in Australia for a while, and then I believe in March came to the Warriors when they came calling. I think reading the tea leaves, especially with what happened with the Lakers last year and how Drummond took his spot, and obviously, you know, he had a guaranteed contract that he got out of, or, well, forced to trade in L.A. I just think he's a little bit done with the NBA existence for a little while. But he, to me, seems like pencil his name in as a potential midseason target.
Write that. It'll do well. Write that one.
Yeah, maybe I'll – honestly, you know, you've inspired me. And maybe I will write that for tomorrow. I do need something to write Warriors related.
They love the Gasol brothers. Do you know that? They love the Gasol brothers.
Yeah, I mean, pass, C-Hub.
They play the Warrior style. They play smart, thinking – basketball, and they can shoot, and those are, that's basically what a drop a Warriors big man, there you go. That's the secret for why Kawakami's can't understand what they're doing at center. They got Marc Gasol on the line. Aggregate that, everybody.
Yeah, and that's, it's also, if Marc Gasol is really committed to like waiting it out and waiting for an opportunity where maybe, you know, first of all, shorter season for a vet, they like that, right? You just jump in and it's like 2 months to the playoffs or something like that. And also, wherever he goes, clearly he wants to play. He's not going to just be, you know, cheering on James Wiseman from the bench and like being his mentor behind the scenes. So it's probably something where the Warriors can just see how Wiseman looks early in the season, see if Looney's holding up, see if some of the small balls work, and maybe Bielitz is really shooting it well, and maybe they don't have that need. But if Wiseman remains unready, if Looney maybe, you know, is getting banged up, they still technically have the mid-level, and that doesn't expire in free, like, you know, you have it through the season. Like, if it gets to a point where they need to outbid somebody on Marc Gasol, they can offer more than the minimum, or whoever. I'm not saying they will, you know, the tax concerns and all that, but it's there. It's a tool they could use.
Yeah, but I think Legum said it, and I know Steph said it to Marcus, that taxpayer mid-level could be used in the buyout market. Like, they've said this. I'm sure they've said this to Steph when he asked, why aren't you using it in the offseason? I'm sure they said, hey, we could use it in the buyout market, and the buyout market could be really good. I haven't really looked at who else might be available. There are always surprising names that pop out.
Kevin Love.
Yeah, that one I don't know about that one.
I'm just curious how Kevin Love's Olympic experience landed with Draymond Green and Steve Kerr.
Yeah, I don't know if I would put him on that list. I would put Martin this way. I might put Paul Gasol ahead of Kevin Love right now. He's going in the Hall of Fame. So I do think they could use somebody else there, and maybe they're going to get interesting there. Who knows? My little backdoor one is just from watching the summer league. I think Kuminga is a four in the NBA, and that means with the Warriors, he might play some five. And again, I don't know if it's going to be right away, but I think we've all commented on this. We've commented this on this podcast. I'll say it again. He's big. He's big. He's way bigger than I thought he was going to be. Bigger than he looked in the G League, I think. I don't know what happened there, but that guy he bumps people and they move. He's long. He plays big. He crashes to the rim. I think he might be a part-time five in the NBA.
Yeah, no, just, you know, chatting with people around Summer League, they were impressed with, particularly, I remember first game they play against Miami, Yurt 7, that big center who got the guaranteed contract from Miami. And he, you know, Kuminga held up decent in the post. He stripped him on one. He was like, you know, he got scored on a couple other times too. But there was this idea of, hey, like, you know, asking some people in the front office, do you think like maybe he could be a small ball five? And the response was eventually. It was definitely not like, yeah, you know, year one, they're going to try him out. How can he hold up against Jokic? But I think with everything with Kuminga, it's more about like, you see what it could be at 22, but they're at least at this point kind of trying to throttle back what it can be at 19, year one.
Yep. I agree. He's just big. You know, that's one thing that jumps off the page, that he plays big in the NBA. And with the Warriors, that means, you know, what's JTA is smaller than him, and he's a 4-5 and maybe gets his best minutes at the five. So if Kuminga can guard that position or halfway guard that position, he does other stuff that's going to make him very valuable if you can play him there. So I just don't think he's a three. I think he's too big for a three. I just think he's a big. He's basically a big. But we can see that more when he plays in the preseason and whatever we get out of that. But I think that's a backdoor extra depth at five down. Like, as you mentioned, Bielitsa, for sure, I forgot about him. But maybe by April, you know, Kuminga can steal 3 minutes for them at the five at some point. Maybe not in a playoff game, but, you know, in some regular season moments, because he's big enough to do it. You know, he's got the wingspan to do it. We shall see. You know, he's not, you don't want him against Gobert or Jokic in a playoff game, but they just need minutes there. That's what I think they need. Mathematically, they just need some minutes at that center position. If you factor in that Looney isn't a guy who necessarily is going to play a full schedule 26 minutes a game, and if you factor in that Wiseman's probably going to hurt once or twice in the season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Kuminga big minutes that we're talking about can be a Kuminga Draymond lineup, a Kuminga JTA lineup, where, you know, he's not. If Jokic is on the floor, yeah, Draymond's got him. If Jokic is on the floor, JTA is probably attempting to guard him, although you're doubling the post in any situation. But, you know, you are giving Kuminga some maybe more of a spread floor, although, again, that's kind of a Draymond problem when we talk about spread floor. But it's going to be – that's definitely going to be a preseason story, an early season story. Like, just what ways do they try to fit Kuminga developmental minutes in and even trying to find – a simplified place for him to help even while they're developing. And, you know, that's remains a Wiseman question as well. Like, you know, it's going to be like, this is going to be a challenging season for Kerr and this new, you know, revamped developmental coaching staff, not just for, you know, find ways to grow these young guys behind the scenes, but finding ways for them to help where they have, you know, using their massive talents, raw talents, to help in minimal ways while also masking the weaknesses. It's going to, especially early season without Clay, it's going to be quite a challenge.
Was James Wiseman a challenge from last season? Now multiply that by three, basically. So, on a team that really wants to win, not just is hoping to win.
Multiply it by three and then times the pressure by about three as well.
Exactly. And by the way, they're going to have to figure out what to do with Clay. You know, again, not if Clay's all the way back, but as he works his way back, how do they do that? How does that all fit? Do you close with Clay, you know, to make sure, you know, so they push him to 24 minutes again? I don't think so. So, like, just working that is going to be a very interesting back and forth.
Early season record survival is very important for them, where they don't feel like whenever Clay comes back, let's say, you know, it's mid-December, it's later December, it's January, whatever, it's not coming back like, get Clay back in the lineup because, you know, they're two games out of eighth in January and, like, they can't afford a loss to Portland for seeding purposes where they have to close down the stretch. Like, they need to create an environment where Klay Thompson can be used exactly how the training staff says he needs to be used. And that includes they probably need Moody to give them a bit more than maybe expected. They need Otto Porter probably to be healthier than he's been in past years. They need Iguodala to stay fresh, you know. And they just kind of need to get luckier in late-game situations. And that's not just luck. I mean, last season there was some late-game bloopers. I mean, Draymond Green getting ejected and Charlotte, Steve Kerr not calling a timeout when he should have had. Or just Damian Lillard missing a three that he made in Portland. Like, some of those losses early in the season where, you know the NBA. It's just those 10 to 12 games a year where it really can't go either way in the last 30 seconds. They need a few of more of those to go their way early in the season just to ease the midseason pressure.
And play at home like they did at the end of the season. You know, I think they were an okay home team last season, but at the end they were a great home team. And it was against winnable, and they were winnable games, but some of them were not. Was it Nuggets? Was it home? You know, they played some tough teams.
They beat the Jazz and Suns on back-to-back games when the Jazz and Suns both wanted to win to try to get the one seed and avoid the Lakers. So
they get 25, 28 wins at home. I think they'll be fine. If they don't, then it's going to be a tough slog, and they might need to lean on Clay a lot more. You know, they'll say they don't want to, but again, I keep saying, like, he's got a 20-minute limit, and he's at 18, and there's 6 minutes to go, and they're down by three. You take him out, or do you leave him in? That's, like, you know, that's the questions they're going to have over and over and over again. Hey, that's what coaching's, that's what you get paid for. Steve's getting a lot of money for this. And so, you know, that's why you have a deep roster, but it's going to be very interesting to watch. One thing I was gonna, I keep seeing this stuff, maybe a little less recently, but you know, Ben Simmons to the Warriors. If they just give up Kuminga, Wiseman, and two number ones, they could do it. Anthony Slater, Warriors giving up Jonathan Kuminga in a Ben Simmons deal.
That is not the expectation. No, I mean, I don't know. Again, I mean, I've written it, but like, Joe Lacob's not being like coy. Yeah. You know, Joe Lacob is telling the fan base his plan. It includes this bridge to the future. And, like, you know, levy all the criticism about the vision that you want at it. I just think it's transparent, though. Like, he very much wants to maintain this youth movement, this very talented, raw youth movement, while also trying to compete with these four max guys that are at varying levels of their late prime. Although, you know, wherever we want to consider Wiggins, he's still early mid prime, but he's also Andrew Wiggins. The Ben Simmons talks still to this point, they're just, again, like, I shouldn't even categorize them as talks because they're not talking about him. At some point, when Daryl Morey, or if Daryl Morey ever has to come to the realization, because it gets so uncomfortable in Philadelphia once camp begins and every Joel Embiid press conference is like 9 questions about Ben Simmons, and maybe ownership gets uncomfortable. If there's any point where Daryl Morey goes, you know what, I have to trade him, and to do that, I will take 50 cents on the dollar. And then he surveys the league and starts giving realistic offers out there. Then maybe the Warriors, who are not proactively trying to shop anyone right now, maybe they come to the table and discuss, hey, look at this very cheap price we might be able to get him at. And by the way, I don't think they would have the best cheap price. I do think there's better and more desperate offers out there from Kings, Wolves, other teams than the Warriors would probably be willing to go. But I believe, as Marcus put it, I can't remember where he was talking about, but he was saying, look, if somebody offers you a Mercedes for $20, you at least talk about, you know, spending $20 for a Mercedes. I think that they would have that conversation, but it is just, Daryl Morey was just nowhere in the ballpark, and the Warriors don't really care that he's not, because this is just the team they expect to have going forward. So that's really where it's at. It has not gone anywhere.
Do you agree with me that the only way the Warriors would talk about doing it is if it's, and not saying it's whatever the value is, just saying the way their roster fits, the way the ages are on their roster, it would have to center around Draymond Green?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like, just from a roster building standpoint, obviously that would make the most sense. I just think, because of what Draymond has been on a playoff setting compared to what Ben Simmons has been on a playoff setting, and the idea that Steph Curry is desperate to win on a playoff setting right now and has the long history with Draymond, that's almost like a non-starter for people that matter in the organization, even though maybe there's others that you know, wouldn't mind you would call it like a younger version of Draymond essentially infused into the mix. It's tough for me to see them come into the idea of swapping them. And if they're not going to do that, then it comes the idea of, can they play together? I think there's some level of like interest, like, you know, you could find ways to make it work and craft some type of offense, and you would have just a killer switchable defense, obviously. But I also think there's people in charge that are just like,
if you're doing that, basically either Ben Simmons or Draymond's your center. You can't play those two and have a center. Cannot do it. It's not possible.
Yeah, and so, you know, you could win in the modern age with like no center and like those two, you know, like weird lineups can win in the new NBA. And I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but I just don't see them giving up what it takes to get Ben Simmons. And so even like the conversations about would it or wouldn't fit, I just think behind the scenes they're just like, look, like this is just the team at this point.
It's too hard. Yeah. It's too hard to put that. And yeah, when you can do easier kind of formulas with, as we said, Portland and the Kings and, you know, even Toronto, you know, you can just put, you can have easier formulations there.
I guess this would be the big question. And Daryl Morey wouldn't do this. This is why I think that sometimes this exercise it can be a little bit pointless, or all the chatter about Ben Simmons. But if Daryl Morey was like, look, Wiggins for Ben Simmons contract swap and give like two future firsts or something like that. Then, so Ben Simmons is a weirder fit on the Warriors than Andrew Wiggins is, but I think that's something you would want to do because Ben Simmons just has the talent, and you have to craft, like, you know, stranger lineups and offensive strategies. But he's just better than Andrew Wiggins, and I think you think of it like that. But the reality is the price is so much higher than that.
Yeah, there's no way that's not what he's going to.
So it's like they're not going to go for this heavy, hefty price for a challenge that, you know, there's a lot of people that matter in the Warriors are like, we don't even want that challenge on the roster. So I don't know.
Throw that offer to Daryl and see what he says, by the way.
Really, he'd say the same thing the Warrior said when Daryl threw that first offer. Click. Anyway, I would be stunned if any Simmons chatter really kind of materializes to anything tangible.
All right, well, let's get into the one point I'm sure people are waiting for us to bring up. I don't think we've talked. I know we haven't talked about this on the podcast. I've written a little bit about it. The Draymond Durant podcast, which was a while ago now, but certainly was a lot of reaction when it happened. They're both saying, or basically Draymond saying that he blamed Steve Kerr and Bob Myers for the aftermath of their blow up. Maybe that's what led Durant to leave, and Durant agreed, whether he was agreeing that it was something he didn't like or whether he agreed that was the main factor he left. Unclear, but that's okay. It's two players talking in a very honest way, which I always support. But what was your response to that, and what have you heard is the Warriors' response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they necessarily loved it, but it's I don't think necessarily leadership love that Draymond brought it, you know, brought the Durant conversation back to the light. But
that's
it's
why he did that podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Draymond. Two things I would say. Number one, it's tough for Steve Kerr. Bob Myers would have more of a leg to stand on, but it is kind of tough for Steve Kerr to want to criticize or like be mad, like, hey, Draymond, why did you bring this Durant situation back up, when like Steve Kerr's gone on several podcasts in the last couple of seasons since Durant has departed and, you know, revived the Durant storyline by saying something, maybe not purposeful, but he has, right? You know, how many times we've had conversations about should Steve have said this, or, you know, so I think Steve kind of knows that it would be kind of hypocritical if he was super mad about it. And also the other thing is, like, Draymond Green has this budding media career where he's on TNT during the playoffs in studio. ESPN apparently is trying to, you know, hire him at some point away from Turner. Like, there's going to be a bidding war even while he's playing. I mean, he's got 3 years under his contract, and like the two biggest media entities are basically jostling for him to be on TV. He's probably, I assume, being paid decently from Bleacher Report to do this new podcast. He's going to say a lot more stuff over the next few years. And I think they know they're going to have to deal with several of these mini fires that he clearly doesn't mind sparking.
Has never minded.
And he is now, to me, he's now becoming more willing to just do it on his own. Like, it's not even just, hey, he's in a press conference and we got him on a tangent because we asked some certain question, and you know what, I'll say this. Now it's like, hey, I'm, like you said, I'm setting up this podcast with Kevin Durant to make headlines for my podcast.
Yep. And you know, they were together in Japan with Steve Kerr, but they're together in Japan in the Olympics. And again, I have zero problem with that. I have zero problem with players giving their interpretation of things that they were directly involved in. That's where, like, people were getting mad, like, oh, they're changing the facts. So they lived it. They can say whatever they want to. I think it was clearly Draymond's version, and Kevin was agreeing with it, but that's okay. He was the one who was yelled at, so he has every reason to interpret it any which way he wants to. I do believe that at some point, you know, hey, I'm as big a Draymond. I was one of the first Draymond guys. That kind of energy, that kind of fire, that defensive intensity, it's so important, has been so important to the dynasty. He's Steph's running buddy. You know, Steph's always going to have him by his right hand. That's important. But when you keep doing this stuff, even if I agree or am fascinated by a lot of it, and I'm okay with it, if you keep doing this stuff and your play starts to fall off in some precipitous way, and whether that's in a year or 2 years, or if it's already happened, you can be the judge of this. you start to wear out your entitlement with a team. You do. And maybe people will get mad at me saying this, but you do. It's you know, part of what they've been okay with Draymond is because he's such an incredible player. He just brings it on the court. If he's not an incredible player, it gets a little tiresome, I think. And
this is this is a natural like story of business, you know, of employee employer, and you know, and that's the like if Draymond's confident he can keep bringing it on the court, he will be able to say whatever he wants off of it.
Absolutely. And he signed for many more years, and teams will want him at the end of the contract. And or he could walk straight to television. This is all true. This is all true. He deserves the money he's getting. You know, one thing I do, like people talk about how terrible these Warriors contracts are with Clay and Draymond specifically. Even in Hollinger, who's a great friend of mine, you know, rips him for paying Curry for, you know, $56 million in 6 years. They had to pay those guys. They had to pay those guys. The guys who get you championships, who get you, you know, help them sign Durant, who have gone through everything they have with this team, you have to pay them when their time comes up. And if it turns out bad in 4 years, that's the life you lead. That's okay. But Draymond's might be the one at the end. That's the one that's going to might look really funky at the end. And it's the smallest of them all, which is the other thing.
Yeah, and I think there's only 3 years left. And I think the way he played defensively last year eased those concerns a little bit. Now they have to be creative with the way they roster build because of him. He kind of handcuffs some, you know, we talk about them trying to have this youth movement. Well, you know, Wiseman's development is made a bit harder when he's trying to fit on the court with Draymond. Kuminga will probably find this season that, you know, maybe we'll look at lineup data and it's like, well, when Draymond's off the court and Kuminga's on, he has more space, so he's typically more efficient, that type of stuff. But look, we know what he is as a playoff defender, as a winning defender. Absolutely. And he showed it again last year. He showed it down the stretch in that 6-0 homestand you're talking about. Even in the play-in game, I mean, they nearly beat the Lakers in L.A. because he was all over Anthony Davis in the first half. Yes. Anthony Davis did not have a good game because of Draymond Green. And like,
he's like worth $28 million practically just to say, go guard Anthony Davis, really. I mean, you know, who else can do that? Giannis? And not a lot of other players, and Giannis is the best player in the league. So, just for that, yeah. Even while people, you know, are wondering how this is going to be worth it at the end, I raise that point. I'm going to say, as I am the number one Draymond guy for what he does on the floor, what he continues to do on the floor. We shall see what happens to him offensively. But yeah, just because you can say, okay, you know what? Draymond's got an AD. That's a pretty important. It's like, that's why Iguodala was so valuable. We'll see what the value is this season. Oh, you got LeBron. Okay, this series, you got LeBron. That's pretty good. That's something that not many other players or teams can say.
Yeah, and then to your other point, just about like maybe late Draymond Green's contract, maybe at some point if he's traded, whatever, however this ends, it was never going to end quiet with Draymond. I mean, if they trade him, you know, like he's going to, it's not like them trading him. He's not going to then do a podcast and reveal all that he wants to and say all that he wants to. So they're willing to live with it because of who he is and what he's done for them.
Yep. Ethan wrote about this like 7 years ago, you know, the whole Draymond factor.
The other thing, the last thing I'd say on it is this is a franchise that's become so comfortable with the gossip storm too, you know, like maybe star X in Philadelphia, New York, Miami, you know, maybe if Jimmy Butler went on a podcast and said, you know, Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, they effed it up, like maybe that would cause more of a storm in Miami because just how they run their organization. That's just not like the Warriors. I think somewhat because they've been hardened in the gossip over the last, you know, half decade or so, and also just because of who Steve Kerr and Bob Myers are, they can brush that type of stuff off easier. And then Draymond Green, if as long as opening night he plays 30 good minutes of defense and has like 13 assists and they win because he made a couple winning plays down the stretch, they're not going to be thinking about what he said in the podcast. Now, where you're right is, when the production really, really dips, particularly the impact defensively dips, it's going to be tougher for him to say all that and stay on the roster. but we haven't reached that point yet. So they're just going to move forward. And Steve Kerr and Bob Myers may not like it, what he said behind the scenes, but they just because of the personalities they are, it's like, okay, whatever. Well, let's get to Wednesday. And Draymond, yeah, they're going to shake Draymond's green hand day one. And I personally don't think it will be a preseason or season issue unless he starts playing poorly. That's what would be an issue.
There's another reason why it's easier for them to brush it off. It's number 30, because first of all, they've got him. He's really good. They know that. That's set. There never was much question that he wasn't going to re-sign extension. Like, that's a fixed thing. Who else has that? I mean, Milwaukee now has it with Giannis, but they didn't have it beforehand, where they just knew this is who we are. And it's good. And everything that fits with him is good for us. And guess what? Draymond fits with him. And the other thing is, Steph wants Draymond on the team. So what are you going to do about that? If you have those two factors, which again are not really duplicated anywhere, where you have like a great player who's your long-term guy, period. That's it. He is the guy. There is no question about it. For as long as he can play, that's who the franchise face is. And you have a controversial guy who has helped him win three championships, who is one of the best defensive players in the history of the league. And he's a little cantankerous. You know what? The other guy likes him, so what are you going to do? I mean, this is how they can get through some of that. Now, Draymond causes a lot of it, and certainly caused it in the Durant thing. But if Steph is okay with it, and Steph is good, can play well with it, and it all works within the system, you just roll with it. Because Steph Curry, if they didn't have Steph Curry, which is, you know, ridiculous hypothetical, because it's all built because they have Steph Curry, it would be a lot different. Even with Bob Myers and Steve Kerr and Joe Lacob and whatever, if they didn't have Steph Curry, Draymond would not exist as a character on this team for very long. Just wouldn't. He wouldn't exist in a lot of different franchises. But with Steph Curry, it works perfectly. You don't mess that up for as long as they're both good.
Yeah, and I think they all know if they win, all that goes away, you know. All the chatter goes away.
That's what bugs them, I think, about Durant again, and maybe Draymond won't say it now, is that they did win with Kevin, and he was still unhappy. I think that's what really messed up the kind of the balance of this, of what it was. They thought Kevin, you know, he's got a wanderlust. He's going to come here, though. He's going to get in Silicon Valley. We're going to win, and it's going to be great. He's going to, you know, show he's better than LeBron James, which he did twice, and it'll be great. He'll just want to stay here forever, and he didn't. And they felt that going into that third year, that's what caused that parade weirdness. That's what caused all the weirdness leading into that camp. It's what caused Draymond yelling at him in November. It just was like, why doesn't he want to stay here? What's, you know, like, it just didn't fit with who they were, the Steph Curry thing. And that was the reaction to everything. It just put them all on, you know, alert. And it made them nervous. And the reason they suspended Draymond publicly was because they wanted to make sure Kevin felt their support. And that's what pissed off Draymond. And Kevin didn't like it very much either. Again, I don't want to rehash the whole thing, but I just want to say that that's what kind of that was the different element in the Warriors' whole chemistry, was that Kevin was not happy even after they won twice.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, I feel like we should wrap it there. You went full circle with the whole thing. Back to Kevin Durant, where it always ends with these Warriors. Next week, I believe Marcus will be back, and we'll probably do some sort of like training camp preview, because the week after that, they actually start media day September 27th, practice September 28th. I believe like October 4th, 5th range is the first preseason game. Like, this is coming quick.
It's coming. It's coming. The NFL just started, and then now we got to start thinking about the NBA too. They moved it up a week, right? I mean, this definitely feels earlier than normal.
This is what it used to be pre-pandemic. I feel like it just feels like a rush, because last year, December 22nd.
Last year was Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yeah, and they like crunched camp together because, yep, you know, they were just trying to rush the season and get 72 games in. But no, this is back to normal. I believe the opener is now October 17th. If you go back like 4 or 5 years, they used to open, actually they used to open near Halloween, and then it was like October 24th range. Yep. Now they're like nearly mid-October. Some of that is because they want to spread the schedule out more for less back-to-backs, all that.
Yep. They've shortened. Remember, like October 1st or 2nd, I always thought was when they start getting to camp. But yeah, 27th, 28th isn't that much earlier. And You know, all the other thing is they move the NFL back a week. That's how, see, I'm such an NFL NBA guy that I base things based on those schedules, and I think I'm feeling it because the NFL moved back a week and the NBA moved up a week. And that screws up me. There you go, everybody.
What you're saying is you shouldn't one day cover week one of an NFL game and then the next day be on a preseason NBA podcast.
Yes, I'm a little bit jolted by this, but that's okay. We survived it. We got to Draymond and Durant, so then I was in my comfortable place. So.
All right, cool. Mark is back next week. Ethan, it was a great run. We love you.
Congratulations, Ethan.
And we're off for another season.